6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to another episode of Buffalo Happy Hour. Mike Petona.
Derek, we are back at our friends over at Addie's, and we have a fantastic guest with us, so we should probably start with names, titles, introductions, if they do so exist. Most times, especially in distilleries, a lot of people are wearing 9 hats at once, but we'll start there, and then we'll dive into all things Record.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kars Peterson. I think the official title is Head of Production or Whiskey Maker. It bounces around. Yeah.
Good deal.
Having a title of Whiskey Maker is sick. Hey, I just make whiskey.
It comes around. I think I've heard all kinds of things. Like some people call themselves the whiskey wizard. Which, you get to name yourself whatever you want in this industry.
Good deal. So we do have a guest audience for this interview, which is pretty fun. Because right after this, there's going to be a class essentially focusing on just a couple of the SKUs that Three Chord has. So we'll start with not necessarily the entire full backstory, just because our audience specifically also knows what Three Chord is. We've done a lot of different reviews with Three Chord. We've even done a single barrel with Three Chord, which is a lot of fun. But let's talk about kind of the Cliff Notes version of what Three Chord is all about, and then we'll dive into each of these three products, potentially a fourth. We'll see. But we'll just try to get a gist of what the latest and greatest is.
Sure. So Three Chord is kind of a joint venture of a lot of people. Neil Giraldo is kind of the namesake, the face of Three Chord. He does a lot of the creative stuff. He's involved in all the tastings. A lot of companies that partner with musicians don't do a lot of actual partnerships with the musicians. Neil Giraldo is very involved. He tastes everything that we make, and he kind of has the
final approval.
Yeah. Final approval is a way to say it. Yeah. He's involved in everything. But he's a great guy. He helps out with everything ground level instead of just being kind of the figurehead of everything.
Were you expecting that when you first started, or did that kind of take
you back
at first?
No. Yeah. I mean, I've worked in various levels of scale as far as distilling goes for my entire professional career. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of these people saying, like, talking themselves up, like, oh, we're involved with whoever, we're involved with this guy, that guy. So hearing them say when I started, like, oh, we work with Neil Giraldo, I was like, yeah, sure, okay. And then, like, I'm on meetings with him. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, like it's nice. It's refreshing to actually have a company that you know, actually stands by mm-hmm. what they say. Yeah.
Sure.
They work with who they actually work with.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the stories that we love because, like Mike was saying, we know the brand, we know the story behind it, and it's cool to see, like, it's not just, like, The Rock's tequila where it's just he's a figurehead to help sell it. Like, mm-hmm. he actually probably tastes all of these way before it's even ready to go out of the shelves.
Oh, yeah. He's tasted some bad stuff, I'll tell you that. Yeah.
it's also unbelievably consistent from a brand standpoint, not just from messaging and marketing and things like that, but what the actual tasting profile is across the board. But there's a lot of different products that we've worked with in the past that kind of got a lot of people more interested and excited mm-hmm. because those are two very different things. Being interested is one thing, but if you're legitimately excited about whiskey, that kind of completely changes the directive of the conversation, especially with somebody who's a novice. So you guys rolled out a few different SKUs recently that kind of bridge a few different gaps with going from that transition of like interested to exciting. So some of them are here, but one of which is a store pick. Sure. I don't necessarily want to start on the store pick just because it's super unique, but mm-hmm. what are those new rollouts that you guys just introduced?
Oh, sure. So, one of the big things we did in this past year was the Backstage series. I think this year we partnered with 13 different bands, which Jeez. Is an enormous amount. And again, we work with every single one of these bands. We actually meet with all of the members. We sit down and taste through stuff. So it was a lot of meetings and a lot of drinking on my part. Which, I mean, there are worse things to do, but
right. there's worse meetings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you get to work with, for me, I graduated high school in 2010. So a lot of the bands that we worked with were bands that I listened sure. to in
like
high
who?
School. Under Oath was one of them.
That's awesome.
Taking Back Sunday. So they were big okay. in like the emo punky scene,
yeah.
you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So back in my like Hot Topic days, like I'm huge on these bands. So it was a big nostalgia trip for
sure.
me. But yeah, we worked with a lot of these different bands, and meeting the guys and the girls, in all these bands and being able to develop something that fits their taste profile. It was super cool and getting to know these, mm-hmm. everyone like as people instead of just like, oh, I have your t-shirt. Oh, I have your album.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah.
Did you notice if these people were interested in whiskey or were they kind of opportunistic at the ability to have their own whiskey, or like what was their interest in whiskey before they like were introduced to you guys?
Sure. No, honestly, pretty much everyone has their whiskey drinkers mm-hmm. first and foremost. The fact that they get to combine their interest in drinking a good whiskey with being able to partner with a brand that works with music and is able to make something that tastes good
yeah.
and is a branded product, like it just kind of works, you know.
Sure.
No one is jumping on to be like, oh, I can get on here and sell a whiskey. Like there are definitely bands out there that just kind of slap their name on something.
Yeah.
None of the bands we've worked with have taken that approach. Everyone has been very involved in making sure that they have something that they would sit down and drink on their own instead of just having something they're like, oh yeah, this can sell, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
What's the scale of their releases? Does it vary drastically by band, or is it just a set number? Does the band make that decision where they're like, let's just do a single barrel of like 180 bottles and see how it does, because we have no idea if our core audience is really going to care?
Sure.
Because not to like throw names, but like Metallica is going to sell regardless of what they put in the
yeah,
bottle.
Right,
you
yeah.
know, there might be people that buy it and just never open it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that like?
It depends on the band, you know.
Okay.
There's definitely some bands that, again, to mention like Under Oath, Taking Back Sunday, like those bands have a big pull.
Mm-hmm.
Even like people my age, they're going to see those names and be like, oh, yeah, I remember those guys. I can't believe they're still around. Like, yeah, let's pick up a whiskey, like drink it and listen to the old albums,
yeah.
pretend we're 18 again, you know. Other bands, we work with other bands that don't have as big of a pull,
yep.
But they're bands that we believe in.
Mm.
people like I sat down for a tasting with Aaron Jones, and you may not even know the name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's kind of a very regional guy. I'm blanking on where he's based, but I sat down in a glorified locker room outside of a music festival and ran him through a tasting and helped him like sit down and blend a whiskey to exactly what he wants in this kind of shithole locker room, you know.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, it's fun to take the amount of care, no matter the size of the band, no matter the draw of the band. It's bands that we like, it's bands that we believe in. Mm-hmm. It's stuff that we want to do, you know.
So walk us through that process of actually getting them introduced to the whiskey. Do you have staples that you're like, I'm always going to bring this toasted barrel, I'm always going to bring this port finish barrel? Like, do you have already a lineup and then you have them choose that, or do you try to maybe get some of their favorite whiskey and pick and choose from your selection of what you might want to bring them?
Sure. It really depends on how much lead time I have.
That's
so
fair.
To bring up Aaron again, I did not have a lot of lead time with him. I rolled up to the music festival that he was playing at in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with two cases full of barrel proof stuff that I just ripped out of the barrel like 2 days before, and kind of sat down with him. And I do this with any band that I work with. I sit down and I ask him, like, okay, what do you drink day to day? What's your favorite stuff that you normally sip on? And depending on what they like, I work with that, and I try and steer what I'm blending with them towards that taste profile. So if they typically drink scotch, if it's super smoky, like, obviously we're an American brand,
right?
We can't make scotch. So steer them towards like a heavily toasted barrel, or like a very smoky corn whiskey or something. Mm. Or if they like bourbon, mm-hmm. like everyone likes bourbon,
right?
But yeah. Steer them towards some of the bourbon options that we have. If they want something a little more funky, I have funky whiskeys. I have all kinds of stuff, mm-hmm. that I can work with. And it really just depends on what they like to drink and what they want to work with to be able to put their name, mm-hmm. on it. And I've run into it before that the stuff they like to drink, they know may not necessarily sell well. So they steer me towards something that's a little more palatable, mm-hmm. something a little more approachable.
That's got to be so much fun for people, especially because if their go-to Tuesday sip is something out of Kentucky, whatever it is, yeah. and you're like, okay, cool. And then their gears start turning and start to think, oh, you know what? What if I could make something that I actually did enjoy? What mm-hmm. would I want? Especially out of something that's generally Kentucky, so it's just going to be corn. Like,
yeah.
do I add something that's got more wheat to it? And that's got to be super cool for you to see their progression mentally of coming up with something a little different. Because I mean, dude, if it's not scotch, you're not even doing it. You're like, why am I here? But, you know, like, for someone like me, it would be kind of cool to incorporate some rye and see what that would do against a wheat, mm-hmm. and vice versa, especially if it is a cast strength, because then you can just get really into the different tasting profiles responsibly, yeah. of course.
Oh,
but,
sure.
like, it's got to be really cool to go through that with someone.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible, too, to see, because even the most... a lot of people who just casually drink whiskey don't realize how much goes into, mm-hmm. a lot of like the making of whiskey, like even what you mentioned, high wheat, like wheated bourbons. People don't realize, like, oh, you have this wheated bourbon, but they don't even consider, like, oh, there might be a rye heavy bourbon,
mm-hmm.
Wild turkey or something. Like, there's all kinds of options out there, and they just like they see the brand name, but they don't realize, like, oh, this is why it tastes that way.
Sure.
So it's always so fun to me to be able to be the one to introduce them to, like, oh, this is why this tastes that way. This is why this tastes that way. This is what happens if we blend them together and meet them in the middle somewhere. So it's always so fun, like, kind of watching the discovery behind, mm-hmm. their eyes, you know.
Is that been what Three Chords doing now? more so than the name stakes, where they're working with artists to come up with their own whiskey to then release.
I guess, what do you mean?
Like, as a brand, because you'll always have your three quart blended. You'll always have Strange Collaboration. At least I hope so, because that's a great skew. But so those are like the name stakes. Like, they're always going to be there, right? Mm. And then now, as a progression of three quart, is that what the brand is starting to focus on more? Is just coming up with a collaborative approach with a different band and releasing their whiskey?
No,
or
not
is it just it's just a segment of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, it's really just a segment. It's our annual project. We work with different bands. The Backstage series is a different thing than like the main stakes three chord skews. A lot of what goes into the main stuff, and we'll probably taste through some stuff later tonight, is still like myself and our other whiskey blender, Ari Sussman, will sit and we'll blend things together if we have a free couple of minutes, and we'll be like, oh, what's this taste like? What's this taste like? Like, we'll bounce ideas off of each other, just seeing what we think might work well. And it's a lot of, there's a lot of failures that come along with that.
Oh,
you're throwing spaghetti at a wall and seeing what
you're
sticks.
Talking to two failures. It's fine.
Yeah. Sure. Do you ever guide people on like, maybe we should add a little bit more of this in to when you're doing tastings and when you're doing these blendings of like, maybe you should throw in a little bit of toasted because that would really elevate it. Are you ever doing that?
I try to avoid it. I try to avoid steering people in what I think will work. My whole approach is helping people discover what they like. Mm-hmm. I think it's a much more collaborative approach instead of me kind of taking control and grabbing their hand and being like, oh, this is what I've found helps in the past.
The classic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I like to help other people kind of, if you were to perfect this whiskey, what would it have more of? What would it have less of? And kind of use that to be able to, here's what I know might be able to help achieve that. Let's try a little bit of this, see what you think. If it doesn't work, we'll try this different approach, stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you ever take like maybe some of those blending observations that you made when you are sitting down with people and take that back and potentially incorporate it into a new recipe or maybe tweak an existing recipe or something like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the entire whiskey blending process is just constantly learning. Mm-hmm. If it's something that you have never thought of before and someone else suggests it, excuse me.
I mean, honest, to that point, I really feel like that's what we did in Toasted Barrels were like, it was just somebody thinking of it and trying it and realizing, oh, no one's done this yet. It's always been a char three. It's always been a char four. What if we just kind of golden brown the thing and see what it tastes like,
you know, absolutely.
And it created a whole different market.
Yeah. Yeah. It, a lot of whiskey making, a lot of whiskey blending. There's all the companies that I don't need to name that have been around for 200 years. Like they know what they're doing. They're doing the exact same thing that they were doing 200 years ago. They know what works. The market works for them. So much of the craft market and the whiskey blending market is trying things that have not been done before. Mm-hmm. It's trying things that maybe like traditionally has not been popular.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. And just seeing, this was kind of frowned upon in the past couple decades by all the purists, but a lot of the purists are kind of being pushed out by a lot of the younger folks, Gen X, Gen Z, people who are trying to find like the next big thing. And like all of these old norms are just getting thrown out the window, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it takes, again, it takes throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what sticks. Yeah.
To be a blender or a whiskey maker, how, like, I guess, when did you know that you wanted to do this? And people that just love whiskey aren't just like the best whiskey makers. You know, like you have to have a certain set of skills to be able to effectively do this and make whiskey that a majority of people will like. Obviously, there's always going to be people that don't like it, but what has been your process to get into this industry and refine your palate to where something that you can blend has a higher success rate of being good?
Sure. Yeah. No, that's an incredible question. So my approach has been very non-traditional, I'll say. My passion before getting into this industry was never whiskey. Mm-hmm. I didn't even like whiskey until I was 23. Yeah, you know.
Nice.
I'm a big baker. So I like to use a lot of different spices in my baking, see what works. I do a lot of like Scandinavian style, like cannelbulla, you know, fancy cinnamon rolls.
Yeah. It's your jam right there. He loves cinnamon rolls.
I do.
I'll bring some next time I'm over.
Sounds good. Thank you.
But I do a lot of, I do a lot of baking, and a lot of baking has so many parallels with the taste profile in whiskey because it's all grains and it's all spices and it's all like these interesting sugars that just come out depending on how you make it and where it's geographically made and stuff. So my palate was trained for whiskey before I even knew what whiskey could taste like. So I did, when I started doing a lot of blending, I mentioned before we started recording that I did a lot of the actual producing it from scratch before this, so that you learn a lot of the different processes and how they affect the final taste profile in the making it from scratch, the actual distilling. The blending portion, you're able to use those abilities that you learn from making it from scratch, and you're able to take that and kind of blend it together and like, okay, I want this, so I'll use something from here. I want this, so I want something from here. And you're able to mix everything together into exactly what you want. So yeah, long story short, like I've been training my palate and training my ability as a whiskey blender and a whiskey maker long before I ever realized that it was an option.
That's so cool to hear, because baking does have a lot of parallels. We teach a class here every month around just like the different types of whiskey and how to taste it and what are you getting from this taste. And a lot of the feedback that we get is vanilla, caramel, oak, which are very traditional in bourbon. But to get to that second level, you have to have experienced that second level. So if you've never had cinnamon before, you're never going to know what cinnamon tastes like in whiskey. If you've never had we joke around like we're just going to go into a grocery store and just start gnawing on every fruit in there, because if you haven't had a dragon fruit before, you won't know what it tastes like in a whiskey. So having that, you've probably been able to uncover a lot of different tasting notes that no one else will have. Like nutmeg, people don't pick up nutmeg very well in whiskey, but it's very common. But if you're not having that on a regular basis, you won't know that that's what it is.
Right.
Same with fig, because we get fig a lot, and we also get a lot of comments where
people you also like, eat a lot of fig Newtons.
Dude, only listen, no more than four in a sitting. I've tried, but It's
like
funny
the saltine stuff where you can only have seven or then.
That challenge I also failed. I also failed the cinnamon challenge. We'll talk offline. But the crazy part is the amount of comments where they're like, how did you even, like, where did that even come from? We're like, we have no idea. Like, we've done over 200 whiskey reviews, which is fascinating for us from a statistical standpoint. But now that we're like diving so deep into it, it's just insane. And then to your credit, all of these different flavors are being made. Like, this was peach. Staves, so that's going to be fascinating. And that's one thing that got a lot of people going from bourbon, rye, etc., to scotch, because they're like, well, I want to see what's going on. And then all of a sudden a scotch is in like a sherry cask or a PX cask, and it's a whole different league of tasting notes.
Oh, sure.
And then it's like, well, okay, well, now I want to go back to bourbon and see if I can get any of those and that, you know. It's just like this never-ending trial of what's actually new and exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a real Ouroboros of like, oh, I want to try this. let's see if that's right in there. And oh yeah, it is. Like, just keep discovering new levels of taste profile, and you're like, oh, I want to see if this also occurs in everywhere else.
Yeah.
Same with Japanese, and then they came out and they're like, this is made out of rice. We're like, what?
You can do that.
Exactly.
So is there a tasting note that you pick up in whiskey that most people don't, like cardamom? I don't know if that's used in baking a lot, but like, is there a tasting note that you get that most people don't?
No, I wouldn't say that's a interesting question. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that my palate is any more or less sensitive than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. I think people pick up stuff, but I don't think they have the training to be able to
identify
it.
Sure.
Yeah. One of my big things when I lead tastings is that I don't like to tell people what I taste, mm-hmm. because I think there's a lot of power of suggestion. Yeah. Like, oh, if I say I taste a lot of cinnamon, if I taste a lot of cardamom, you'll immediately taste those things. So I like to just tell people the basic facts, like, oh, this is a Kentucky bourbon finished in Pinot Noir casks. And what do you pick up? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you like out of this? I really don't think... I don't think people who have more training are any more qualified to taste bourbons or taste whiskeys. I think that you're able to taste these things whether or not you realize it or not, you know?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So going back to the Backstage series, this Allman Brothers won the Peach Staves. Walk us through how that came to be, because it's not like Three Chord just had a barrel that was Peach Stave and you're just like, this is the one that you want, right? Like, there had to have been some sort of dialogue back and forth, and then somehow you just landed on that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure, yeah. So the Allman Brothers, the standard $50 blend? Oh, we can edit that one out. Yeah, I'm the production guy. I'm not the sales guy. So the standard blend is kind of a blend of a couple different whiskeys, and then we finished it with toasted peach staves, like you said. That was a conversation with we worked with Dickie Betts up until, I think, the last meeting. Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was
March of last year he passed away.
Yeah. Right, so before that. Yeah. So we were meeting with him up until he was no longer able to meet with us. So the standard one, we kind of bounce the idea back and forth with them to be able to finish a blend of whiskeys with just a toasted peach wood. Just to kind of set it apart from other things. And it's not overpowering. It's not too toasted. It's not too smoky. It's just enough to be able to feel like, oh yeah, there's something else going on there. That's really interesting, you know. And it was one of those things that myself and Ari worked really hard on, making sure that it was balanced. It was not overpowering. Mm-hmm. We want you to know that there is something different going on there, but it's not going to be like smacking you in the face.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. Are we able to open this? Can we try this one out? Because I've never had this one before, and this is something that I'm very fascinated in. Mike was saying that I love scotch. A lot of scotch tasting notes are like ripe fruits, peaches, pears, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see how prevalent the peach comes through, because like you're saying, that's a lot of peas in that sentence. But like like you were saying, it's very easy to overdo it for this and make it so the whiskey is so peach-focused that now you don't even taste the whiskey anymore, and it almost tastes syrupy. So was that like a discussion with them around how we can do this and not have it be overpowering?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was a portion of the discussion to make sure that it wasn't something that was going to be like basically a glorified peach liqueur.
Okay.
And this one, you'll notice it wasn't finished with actual peach juice or anything. It wasn't finished with peach anything. The only thing it
cheers
the only thing it touched was the peach wood itself, so you're not going to pick up a lot of actual peach.
Yeah, so it's not literal peaches in there, it's the peach wood.
Correct.
Got it. That makes more sense to me. Cool.
It's not too bad.
How old is this?
This one is a blend of 4 and 6 years. So this one, 4 and 6 year whiskeys, and then finished with peach wood for, I think it was about 3 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's 95 proof.
95 proof. Yep.
This is delicious.
Thank
you. $50. Yep. This is really good.
Yeah.
It's 50 here at Addie's, and if you do live in the great state of New York, feel free to go on their app, and they can ship it right to your door. Moving on.
Yep. No, this is a very approachable, like, toasted wood whiskey.
Yeah.
The bonus of having the Allman Brothers backing it, like, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fascinating how it's smooth, but it's still spicy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's got just a little bit of campfire going behind it. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, this is definitely not syrupy. Like, you would think if you hear peach on this. This is very, very well-rounded. It's very smooth.
I would never add ice to this.
Good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, have whiskey however you like it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no reason.
Yep.
There's no reason. Just, I don't know, put it outside and let it cool off for a little bit and then just bring it in. We live in Buffalo. Yeah, it's going to be fine.
Now, are there ever any situations where when you're doing these blending processes, you and Ari kind of go back and forth on not necessarily disagreeing, but just general conversation around what you feel the best blend would be, or are you mostly in agreement with each other?
Oh, just stop. You guys argue?
Yeah.
What's it like back there?
We slap each other around, you know. No, it's...
Just ask him, dude.
I am. I am asking
gonna
him.
Not going to come across.
Oh, man. No, it's... for the most part, I mean, it does come down to people like what people like. Our approach is really, like, coming up with 2, 3, 4 different blends and working with the bands themselves to be like, all right, taste through these 4, like, let it sit for a night, taste them again, see what you like out of each one, and we'll kind of use that to hone in on a couple final ones, and then from those 2 or 3 final ones we try and hone in on something that works for all of us. At the end of the day, Ari and I are maybe the goalkeepers. Like, we want something that we know is easier to produce on our end, the production guys. But it's still going to be something that the band themselves appreciates and likes. Yeah, you know, like, something that they would be happy to put their name on.
Sure.
Yeah.
So for the backstage series, is it a forever product, or is it offered for a limited amount of time?
For the most part, their annual releases. For the Allman Brothers blend, it's going to be it's going to be a forever release. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we're partnered with the Allman Brothers estate at this point for this release, and it's going to be sticking around forever.
That's amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
When you take something like this, though, going back to the whole blending process and how you present it to people, you have your different barrels and you're like, blend these together, let's taste some of these. When you're talking about a release like this, where now you're involving multiple barrels, and when you involve multiple barrels, there's the ability to make it consistent, but also there's the ability to make that initial thing that you tasted is now different because there's these different barrels that you're incorporating. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be, like, I guess, is there going to be an annual tasting to make sure that this is consistent? Or I guess, how do you take something small scale, like a single barrel, and now expand it to be a small batch, let's say?
Sure. A lot of tasting.
Sure. Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
No, that's kind of... That's kind of the beauty of small batch stuff, is that nothing is ever going to taste exactly the same. It's always going to be slightly different juice. One thing I'll say is that I have my little Excel spreadsheet of like all of my recipes that I've
made.
Here
we go.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Dude, he gets so excited.
Now I'm excited. Hell yeah.
I know.
Let's do some VLOOKUPs, baby.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Pivot tables? What?
there was so much
more
to life.
His eyes are glassing over. Yeah.
The problem is that we took an Excel course together in college.
Yeah.
We sat next to each other for a reason. We both ended up graduating.
Right. Oh, okay, so one of you did work.
Yeah. Correct. That was me. That was me.
100%.
But let Mike not fool you. He called me the other day and goes, yo, you wouldn't believe this thing that I did on Excel. I'm like, yeah, boy, let's go, baby. So he's catching on.
I like math when I'm able to do it.
Correct.
Yeah, sure.
I don't
yeah.
like riddles and puzzles because okay, if I can't figure it out, I get annoyed. But otherwise, it is, I do appreciate it. So, of course, you'll have your consistent staples to make this, mm-hmm. right? Where it's yep. like, I need percent, I need percent, I need percent. And then from that point, that's when you're talking about the tasting to get it as close to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So we'll have our percents. Those percents are flexible.
Ooh, it's a range.
Sure. Yeah.
48 to 52% of
something
a.
like that. Yeah.
Got
yeah.
it.
So it'll be like, all right, this is what we're shooting for. This is our starting point, kind mm-hmm. of. And yeah, we'll go in and we'll taste it and be like, oh man, this year it needs a little bit more of this. It needs a little bit less of this. Such and such.
Sure.
Not to get, feel free to not answer this question if you can't, but for this product specifically, you do get an element of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get that with this? Is that because of the toast slash char level, or is that because of a specific thing that you're doing?
No, that's the toasted peach wood.
Okay.
So my base is in Chelsea, Michigan, where our warehouse and our production is located. So I'm visiting. I love the air.
Nice. Yeah. No, you don't. Don't lie. No, okay. I'm just kidding.
No, it's great.
Weather could be better for you, but
oh, it's Michigan. I'm used to Michigan stuff.
It's true.
Like, you
it's
know,
true.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, this is great. I can right. take my coat off. Yeah. No. So I work with a local bakery because they have the size of ovens that I need to be able to put these wood pieces in, because I can't fit a fucking like 3 foot long piece of wood in right. my home stove. Like, you know, it's not going to work. And my
right.
wife's going to be livid with me
yeah, right.
for smoking out the kitchen. But no, I sit there and I toast these pieces of wood for long enough that I know what I'm looking for. And then I'm able to take that back to the whiskey. And I put it in the whiskey for a few weeks, and I just taste it when I think it's close, and I keep tasting it until it's ready.
So, for sake of conversation, we'll say it's 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? So, are you stealing with a thief at, like, you know, 16 days, and then 17, 18, until it gets to the point? Or are you like, no, I'm going to wait like a full 48 after the first taste? So day 16, I'm going to taste it. Now I'm going to wait 2 full days and then taste again. Or is it every day?
That really comes down to what it tastes like at, for example, 16 days.
Oh, well, that's fair too. Cause it's also aging at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah.
Got
and like the different times of year that you do it is going to have a huge,
draw.
Yeah. What temperature it's sitting at mm-hmm. in the warehouse and everything, like everything affects it. So
this is I'm just kind of coming to this moment here, is that this is still aged in a new char American oak barrel, but you're putting in pieces of toasted peach stave, or is the whole barrel being toasted peach stave?
No, we're just putting in
Got it. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Cool.
Yep. Yeah, because peach wood barrel is A, going to be very expensive,
correct,
and B, going to leak a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's probably very true. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So we'd end up with a very, very small batch.
Yeah. Yeah. One bottle. Good luck.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. The ultra, ultra collector's edition. Yeah.
So looking at this, the middle one here, you have the bourbon and corn whiskey that is finished in honey and toasted barrels.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot on that label. So can you dissect that a little bit?
So the honey toasted is, oh man. So this was a little before my time. We're starting to work on other batches of it. Again, I've only been with the company for 2 years, mm-hmm, but I'm picking up the pieces. The honey toasted came from honey barrels. Mm. There are honey producers that finish their honey in used whiskey barrels, wow, which is
awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I have some of it sitting in my pantry at home, and it makes a hell of a tea, I'll tell
you.
Oh,
yeah? Oh, there you go.
It's a little expensive for tea.
Sure.
I'll say that. But no, it's toasted staves, it's honey barrels, and everything kind of comes together to balance out. Again, a lot of my approach comes, mm-hmm, from baking. You want a little bit of like toasty, like graham crackery stuff, and you want some sweetness from the honey, mm-hmm, and everything. But you want to be able to balance all that, so...
Where are you sourcing the honey again?
Oh, it depends. I think this last batch that I've been working on comes from a honey farm in Georgia.
Hmm.
Nice.
Something.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but
no problem.
The label saying bourbon and corn whiskey is interesting because obviously corn whiskey is its own category. Bourbon is its own category, but mm-hmm, bourbon is corn. So was there ever any thought to just like call it bourbon, or like, because there would have been no, based off the way that the label is, there would have been no issues with that, I would guess. But sure. Is it more the selling point that this is also bourbon as well as corn whiskey, that you kept both of them on the label?
You know, that's a hell of a question for the sales guys. I just make stuff tastes good, you know?
Yeah. Well, so like that one has... You're obviously taking some from the bourbon cask and from the corn whiskey cask. Is there, I don't have no idea if you would know this off the top of your head, but do you know like the percentage breakout of like this is 50% bourbon, 50% corn, or do you have any idea of what that would have been?
For this specific batch?
Yeah, yeah.
Off the top of my head, no. I think this one was made before I came around.
Got it, okay.
But no, I mean, like, it all comes down to what tastes good,
sure,
to the person blending it at the time. My approach is a little more like for this one, I think the corn sweetness also lends itself to the honey sweetness a lot. They mingle and, it plays together really well. So a little higher corn whiskey doesn't hurt.
Sure.
You know,
so you guys source all your whiskey. Do you notice a lot of flavor differences from the different regions that are being sourced from? And how much does that play into, like, this three-chord whiskey is strictly Michigan or, like, strictly Indiana or something like that? Like, I guess, how much does the geographical region play into, even though it's the same mash bill, it tastes widely different?
Oh, man. Like, we have our mainstays. Mm-hmm. Like, we like to work with a lot of Indiana. We like to work with a lot of Tennessee. We like to work with a lot of Kentucky. There are some distilleries that pop up here and there that we work with for special projects.
Any out of Texas?
Yeah, yeah. We have a couple. We have a few barrels of Texas stuff sitting, mm-hmm, around. Yeah, it's good. It's very different. I don't know how much, mm-hmm, Texas whiskey you guys have had, but it is...
Not enough.
It's wild. Mm-hmm. It's cool stuff. We don't work with the guys from Balcones, but those guys are doing incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Texas is a...
It's a different league just because of how hot it is.
Oh, my God, yeah. They empty a barrel and, like, 2 gallons come out of it just because everything fucking evaporates.
It's insane. Nuts. Yeah, it's insane.
Like, the return on investment from a business standpoint is just...
garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But, no, we know what regions we typically like to work with to get to the taste profiles that we like, especially in our mainstays. Mm-hmm. Our small batch stuff is where we like to experiment, like I kind of alluded to earlier, is where we like to play around with stuff that we're not really used to. So we'll source some weird stuff here and there. Yeah.
What about a cooperage? Are there mainstays for, like, from a cooperage standpoint, or do you, over the years, because it's been over a decade at this point, where you're like, yeah, but I'm still seeing that this cooperage is just producing a slightly better barrel, especially if I'm trying to do this.
Sure. I will say, since we source all of our barrels already made and already filled, we don't have much control over the cooperages. Sure.
I feel like that's sad for you.
Yeah.
Because it's one element. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
It's one great thing where you can really dive into the weeds and be like, let's figure this out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's something that so many people don't really think about. I've worked with small cooperages who take 3 days to make a barrel, and the wait time on these guys is nuts, but the barrels they make, is the quality is out of anyone else's league. And then I'll work with other companies, again, this is from my making from scratch days, I'll work with other companies that they can turn out and send you like a truckload of barrels in a week, and it really depends what you're going for.
Well, and budget.
Yes. Budget is a big thing, especially in the craft industry. Mm-hmm. And so many people don't really realize there's so many things that go into actually coopering a barrel, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you can use Missouri hardwood oak that is the mainstay for every cooperage in America. Missouri oak is, by and large, what people use. But I've worked with, being based in Michigan, I've worked with companies that use Michigan hardwood oak, and it's totally different. Mm. Even though it's the same tree grown in a different region, it's a totally different experience, totally different taste profile.
That's so much fun.
Yeah.
I want to get so deep into that eventually at one point because we never talk about the differences between oak. Like, oak is just very general. And
yeah,
I think that
I agree.
People in the bourbon industry really, myself included early on, are really like, oak is oak. Like, that's just the staple and that's the consistency. But
it's not.
Oak in Washington and oak in New York is very, very different.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing that we really need to get into eventually.
And that's the one thing that we really appreciate about Empire Rye is when you get into it, there's a lot of local distilleries here that they'll release a rye whiskey, and then the rye is from Western/upstate New York, and it's all butter.
Yeah,
sure.
All you taste is butter, and you're like, "What is going on?" They're like, "Yeah, it's a 95.5." It's like, "Where's the baking spice?" Like, it doesn't exist. You know, and it's just because it's here. Mm-hmm. But if you get a high rye somewhere else, all you taste is pepper.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm like, this is nuts. And then that kind of transformed that whole conversation because we're still trying to. It's going to happen, but we're going to go on a cooperage tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to happen sometime.
So the third option in front of you is a staff pick, and it's another single barrel option. Tell me how your approach differs when you're talking to a store and you're doing a staff pick versus this backstage series, because they're probably relatively similar, but I would love to hear your thoughts on how those differ.
Sure. So with staff pick single barrels, it's almost a lot easier because single barrels, there's no blending. What Ari and I do is we will go through and we'll pick out this barrel and we'll pick out that barrel and be like, oh, these are actually really good. Like, we should set these aside, not just dump them with everything else and blend it together. And sometimes those barrels will taste it and we'll say to ourselves, like, oh, you know what? This would do really well on its own in, for instance, a cognac barrel. And it's just all these things that you end up with all of these separate barrels that you're like, oh, I really like this one. I really like this one. I really like this one. All for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And then you can just kind of go around all these stores and accounts and everything and say, these are all of my favorite things. What do you like?
Yeah.
What would you like? You know?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. The, have you ever gone to like, say this would feel, this would be great in a cognac barrel. Then you put it in a cognac barrel and you're like, just kidding. Maybe we go back to blending this. Has that ever happened?
Not yet.
No.
I'm crossing my fingers. Yeah. Hopefully it continues to not happen.
Yeah. The store picks, and we're always telling people, like, if you want bourbon and you see a store has their own pick, go to that for the first part, because that's going to most likely be a taste that you're not going to be super familiar with, because it's a single barrel. Like, single barrels are generally very expensive, but you look at something from Three Chord and you're looking at a store pick and you're talking about $49 for that product. So it's a relatively affordable option for a product that you're probably not going to get day in and day out because it's a single barrel. Mm-hmm. The Backstage series is a little bit different because they're not single barrels, but they're generally on, we talked about this about a little bit. Small Bash doesn't really have a requirement to say it has to be less than 2,000 barrels or whatever.
Right.
But I'm assuming most of these Backstage series, probably outside of this one because this is going to be a main a staple, but most of them are relatively lower batches, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Probably not a single barrel, but 5 barrels?
Usually like 5 to 6 yeah. barrels at the largest, at
yeah.
the absolute largest.
So that's fascinating because for all of our listeners, if you're going into a store and you see Three Chord on the shelf, like, obviously their staple bourbon of like less than 40 or around 40 in New York is always going to be a hit. The Strange Collaboration has been one of our favorites for a very long time. But if you can find a store pick or if you can find one of these Backstage releases, it's going to give you a taste that probably isn't common to you in like your bourbon journey because of what they do to this. So when you're making these store picks or these Backstage Series 2, are you trying to have it be different from your staples enough where you can market it that way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because if you're making something that's just a different version from your standard offering, standard SKU, whatever, why bother doing
right.
it?
Like, sure.
You want something to be able to stand out as much as whatever band, whatever whatever account, whatever store you want. You want something to be able to set that aside from everything else that you're already doing. Even the cognac barrel, single barrel, it's completely different from any other
sure.
whiskey that we're producing, just because it's something that we sat down and tasted and we were like, oh, this is cool. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Let's play with this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we had a blast.
Yeah.
We had an absolute blast with the Three Chord single barrel, and we sold 120 bottles in 3 hours. It was at 80-20, where it was 80% toasted. And it was
80% cognac, 20% toasted, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
You're correct. Sorry, dyslexic.
Yeah.
His spreadsheet's more accurate than mine.
Sure,
sure. And it, spreadsheet's right here.
It was incredible. It was incredible, and it was 116 proof, and it was super delicious and smooth with a really high hug. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And I've had two other single barrels from Three Chord, and they're solid.
Yeah.
They're just an unbelievably solid option, and I love store picks. If anybody ever asks me, like, oh, I'm going to a liquor store, like, what do I buy? I'm like, dude, find a store pick.
Yeah.
Because you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much more fun for that company, regardless of who it is, because they're always going to have, like, oh, I'm pumping out this. It's like, oh, this is different. Like, this is a store pick. Like, this is kind of fun. We all talked about it, you know, and it just adds another element to somebody's Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're also funding.
Yeah.
So that's
absolutely help me flex my creative muscles, please.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like, it's just fun. Otherwise, it's just status quo.
Yeah. And you and Ari crush it. Like, I mean, out of the single barrels, I really do. And I'm not just saying this because you're here. I really do love three chord version of single barrels because I really do feel like you guys take pride in saying, this barrel isn't going anywhere except for a single barrel because this one is just so special. So I do want to give you guys kudos to that because we're always the ones to say, like, don't sleep on three chord. Like, three chord is a very good affordable option that always punches way above its price point.
Well, it's also because we really are just so sick of Kentucky bourbon and you guys are doing things outside of Kentucky. Yeah. So it also, that's a massive help, but it's true because you realized as an organization that there's better tasting profiles outside of, you know, 70% corn sitting in something brown.
Right.
So it's just the nature of the beast. But once you realize that, but you got to venture out. You got to bake. You got to use cacao nibs and grind them up and throw it into some sourdough bread and see what happens.
You got so mad at me when I said cacao nibs one time, and now it's your favorite. So everybody loves the exclusivity of the Backstage series.
Yeah.
They want to know what one's the best. And before we close out, I just want to hear from your perspective, what was the best Backstage series that you've done? That might be difficult because if you say Allman Brothers, everyone else is going to be pissed off.
You know, it's going to be under oath. He's mentioned it five times.
Correct, yeah. But like when you look at the juice that's in it, which one are you most proud of? Maybe not the best, but like you're the most proud of to make.
Man, it's like picking your favorite kids. Yeah. No.
Well, I only have one, so it's not too hard.
Yeah, correct. I have zero, so.
Perfect. So none of them. Yeah, next question.
Let's move on. No, I think, honestly, the favorite one I worked on this year, and it's kind of flown under the radar, is Drake White's blend.
Oh, okay.
And I had not heard of Drake White before this year's Backstage series started coming all together. Ryan Gill, our award-winning innovative director, he finds all these bands, and they're all so interesting, and they're all so talented, and Drake White was particularly interested in coming up with something super interesting and super unique, and we played around with all sorts of stuff for him, and it is one of the most wild just blends that you would never think would work, and it's so cool to be able to sit there and sip it, and like on my end knowing what went into it and looking at it and being like, oh, none of these ingredients should work together, but you're
can
sipping.
You tell us or no?
Well, or what's the label say?
What does the label say? Texas and Kentucky.
Oh, there we go. Texas. Let's go,
Texas,
bud.
Texas and Kentucky,
yeah,
see?
Yeah. Okay. So it's got a lot of Texas corn whiskey in there. It's super interesting. It's super smoky, super sweet.
Is it toasted, not toasted? High char, low char?
Couldn't tell you.
High proof, low proof?
High proof.
Okay.
Well, it was high proof blending, and then I think... Tony, do you remember what the proof going into the bottle is?
We did 13 of them this year, so they're a little fuzzy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think it was a 95.
Okay.
Yes.
But it was a dynamic whiskey.
Yeah.
You would have never thought. I tasted it with him actually at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. I was like, oh my goodness, who made this? Seriously, it was really dynamic.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So if you can find it, what is it called then? The Drake White?
Drake White.
Drake White.
Yep.
Is it available still, or was that kind of really quickly gone? Yeah. Oh, it's just coming. Got it. Okay.
Soon to be released.
Yeah. Nice. So if you go on our website, you should be able to find it still. Yeah. Order online.
We'll talk to our people.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That's awesome.
Cool. Anything else that we didn't touch on? I mean, I know that we can talk about blending for a very long time, but anything else that you wanted to touch on while you're here?
No, man. Like, I'm an open book.
Yeah.
If you guys didn't ask it, it's not getting answered tonight.
Love that. Now, really appreciate you coming on it and talking about it. The blending process, we've talked to a lot of distillers, but mostly we've been talking to craft distillers that are distilling, not necessarily blending. So getting that insight as to how blending happens, especially like just blending at scale is such a craft because you're working with a lot of capital when you're doing that. And it has to work or else it's not going to be successful. You're going to lose a lot of money. But like taking something like this and trying to do it at a massive scale like this Allman Brothers one, it's really cool to see how Three Court has really dove headfirst into this whole backstage series and watching it grow. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, cool. I've been thrilled to be here. Yeah!
So thank you everybody for joining today's episode. If you are interested in anything Three Court, go to your local liquor store. All their staples will be there. But if you do see a store pick or any of the backstage series, check them out. You can visit them on Instagram and their website. They have a very robust website where you can find all of your information there. If you are in the great state of New York, go to Addie's. You can download their app, and then they will ship the whiskey to you. And we, as we always say, we recommend to drink responsibly, good person. And Michael.
Don't flitter.
We're out.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.